Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in the last but one chapter in the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 35, on our journey through the Word. Today's chapter is about remembrance. When I was young, I was into a lot of punk and post-punk music. Can I get an amen? Is London Calling anyone else? Anyone? Bueller? Ferris Bueller? But there was a song by a band called Firehose that said, "Remember the time me and you was remembering about the time we remembered about membering? Remember?" Well, the Hebrew faith had hardwired into it the practice of remembering. In fact, that is what all the feasts that God commanded were about. And today, we're going to talk about the feast of the Passover, which Hosea reinstates during his time as the king of Judah. In verse 16, we read, "So at that time, the entire service of the Lord was carried out for the celebration of the Passover and the offering of burnt offerings on the altar of the Lord, as King Hosea had ordered. The Israelites who were present celebrated the Passover at that time and observed the festival of unleavened bread for 7 days. The Passover had not been observed like this in Israel since the days of the prophet Samuel, and none of the kings of Israel had ever celebrated such a Passover as did Hosea with the priests, the Levites, and all Judah and Israel who were there with the people of Jerusalem. This Passover was celebrated in the 18th year of Hosea's reign." Now, it's true that we just spoke of this with Hezekiah a few chapters earlier, but it's important to know that to the Jewish believer, remembering something again and again wasn't tedious, but rather necessary. Therefore, the writer of 2 Chronicles commends not just Hezekiah, but also Hosea for putting this most important of feasts back in front of the people of Israel, so they could remember what was necessary about their relationship with God. That number one, they were redeemed by blood. And number two, they were rescued from slavery. And number three, they owed God everything. That's why Peter, when writing to the Jewish believers scattered all over in his book, 2 Peter, writes in chapter 1, verse 12 and 13, "So I will always remind you of these things, even though you know them and are firmly established in the truth you now have. I think it is right to refresh your memory as long as I live in the tent of this body." You see, that feast was meant to remind the people and put before them every year just what it cost for God to redeem them. It cost the death of the firstborn of all of the children of Egypt. And God said, "Rather than killing your firstborn, I will redeem them, but you will offer me a sacrifice every year to remember that I spared you by punishing someone innocent." Peter knew what Jesus had taught him, that we needed to remember what God had done for us. The Passover, if you remember, was the supper where the Jewish believers spent a week getting rid of all the leaven in their house. Leaven, by the way, is yeast, and it makes bread rise. They didn't have time to put it in a bowl on the night that they fled from Egypt, so they just brought their flour with no yeast and cooked up a type of flatbread that we know as matzah when they left Egypt suddenly, when God caused the death of the firstborn. And God told them that yeast actually resembles sin. It grows bigger and bigger, and it spreads like yeast. So every year, Moses told them God wanted them to remember what God had done for them, and that though they had been slaves under harsh taskmasters, that God now wanted them to celebrate being free, but not just from the Egyptians, but from sin itself. God would make them holy, and he wanted them to rejoice in their new life, and so the Passover was a party. It wasn't a depressing, somber meal, but a 7-day feast where all your work ceased, you took a week off, spent time with your friends and loved ones, and threw the best party of the year. And, more importantly than anything else, you remembered. Now, all of this had been forgotten under the bad kings of Judah. And Hosea, therefore, made the effort to kickstart this feast of remembrance of the Passover back into the collective psyche of the Jewish people living in Judah, just like Jesus did before he died. Do you remember the night before Jesus fulfilled the Passover in the New Testament? He actually became that lamb that would be sacrificed to set us free. Well, you remember that Jesus was killed the day after the Passover. So on the eve of his death, his final meal with his disciples was the Passover. But Jesus did something radical at the Passover. He took the Jewish feast that celebrated redemption out of bondage and slavery, and he added something new. He took the bread and said, "This is my body," then took the cup of wine, which was drunk in stages, and added another stage and said, "This is my blood, which will be poured out for you." Of course, nobody there thought he would be dead 24 hours later. His blood literally drained out of his body at the crucifixion. But it's his words that haunt us, "Do this in remembrance of me." Wow, a remembrance of what Jesus did for me, as if I could ever forget. But you know, I'm not sure if you realize this yet, but every epistle Paul wrote is about the three things that Jesus did: his life, death, and resurrection, and what it means to you. If you read Paul in any of his epistles, you'll see he can't get away from what Jesus did because he could never forget. And he didn't want us to either. Jesus wanted us to have hardwired into us the life, death, and resurrection that was his, because it affects all things. For example, when someone insults you, Paul says, "For consider him who endured such evil from sinful men." When Paul speaks of being beaten for the gospel, he says, "I fill up in my body what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for me." Paul knew that Jesus suffered only 6 hours, whereas Paul was going to suffer an entire eternity in hell. And through that perspective, Paul says, "You know, I could live with a little beating now and then if I need to." I believe that when we keep the cross close within our view and start to see everything with Jesus up close and personal, it begins to affect how we see everything in general. When I was a kid, our side mirrors on our cars had a silver dome that gave a different perspective. There was a little phrase printed on the side that read, "Objects in the mirror are closer than they actually appear." We should be like a driver in a car who's driving forward but constantly checking that rearview mirror, having a cross-shaped dome attached to it so we can see everything the way that God sees it. It's when I stop seeing the cross that things get out of focus, and I misjudge my situation, and I get in accidents. Well, Hosea gets into a bit of an accident at the end of this chapter. Despite being told that Hosea never turned to the right or left, but served God with all his heart, at the end of his life, he rushed out into a battle he couldn't win, and it cost him his life. He shouldn't have gone into the battle, but Carchemish was a strategic gateway city that would open his whole kingdom if Egypt could wrest it out of the hands of the Babylonians who controlled it at that time, opening him up to conquest. Necho, king of Egypt, even tries to warn him off the fight, saying, "What quarrel is there, king of Judah, between you and me? It is not you I am attacking at this time, but the house with which I am at war. God has told me to hurry, so stop opposing God who is with me, or he will destroy you." Verse 22 says, Hosea, however, would not turn away from him, but disguised himself to engage in battle. He would not listen to what Necho had said to God's command, but went to fight him on the plains of Megiddo. Archers shot King Hosea, and he told his officers, "Take me away, I'm badly wounded." So they took him, and he died. Verse 25 tells us, Jeremiah composed laments for Hosea, and to this day all the male and female singers commemorate Hosea in the laments. These became a tradition in Israel and are written in the laments. Hosea would be Judah's last great king and the last of the reformers, and we only have one more chapter, and a number of kings who are thrown in it as kind of throwaway kings, who after Hosea didn't really seem to matter anymore. And that brings us to our point. Remember the kings who followed God and what it brought them. Then remember the kings who didn't and what it cost them. Remember the kings who were faithful to God, who ruled their own lives and kingdom well. And remember those kings who ruled neither themselves, their passions, their families, nor their kingdoms in a way that anyone would want to emulate. And ask yourself today, what have I done with the trust God has given me? He's given me my life. Will I submit it into his hands as Hosea did? Will I be that young man or woman who follows him, turning neither to the left or the right? They're still out there today, and they're better off and happier for giving God everything.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.